Hey everyone, it's editing Yvette here. I wanted to point out the dates here because I got so lost in the conversation, and there will be a part two because a conversation around gendered violence is a conversation that unfortunately is ongoing. That it's even a thing is outrageous, right? So I wanted to give you all the dates for Rest in Power. It started on November 25, which was yesterday, at the day of this show airing right now, and it's running till December 12. And all the details will be on the SheBot page. Anyway, into the interview now. Good evening, everyone. You're listening to SheBop on 3CR with Yvette. Today I am joined by, I have Zara O'Day, if I'm saying that right, and Holly. Well, we've got just Holly or CM. Holly
Holly
CM.
Clark Milligan.
Okay. Glad you said it. Zara and Holly. Zara is an RMIT student and Holly is postgrad. And they're both here to speak with me about Rest in Power, which is a powerful new exhibition honoring the women lost to gendered violence and the student protest movement that inspired it. Thank you too for being on SheBop.
Thank you for having us.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Cool. Well, yeah, this is really, really important stuff. Before we get into the discussion, I do want to put a content warning here for any listeners. We are going to be discussing gendered violence, and it could be distressing to some listeners. It's distressing to all, it should be. But yeah, a content warning if it's too sensitive and to bow out now. So this exhibition grew from RMIT students turning their graduate show into a protest. Can you tell us about that moment and why it became so significant? And I'll throw that to Zara or Holly or yeah, whoever wants to
Do you
go
want to
first.
speak to this, Holly, as one of the students who participated?
Yeah, of course. It was an intense week for sure. Ellie, one of my fellow painting students, is the one who started the movement. She's absolutely lovely. And I think one of the key things that sort of gave strength to it almost was maybe that little sense of sacrifice, I think. And I think that's what started making it feel so powerful. It's that even if you're outside of the art community, I think people intrinsically understand like how much time and how much effort the students put in and how much the exposure that you get from the grad show means. I mean, for example, I think we had 5,000 people come through last year. That's generally the expected number of people that you have coming through the grad show. And to take that moment and instead shift it to a different topic, shift it to something of protest is, it's perhaps in the broader scale a small sacrifice, but it's a big thing for the students, and it was a really big thing for Ellie to do. And I think it was the power of that sacrifice that drew everybody else in to also participate and make it such a moving movement, so to speak.
Sarah? Absolutely. I can only speak to this as a student graduating this year. So I wasn't a part of the original movement, but I've had the absolute privilege of working with Jess Hutchison, who is the programming coordinator at Queen Victoria Women's Centre, and reached out to our lecturers, who are mine this year and were Holly's last year, regarding that movement and regarding wanting to make this exhibition at Queen Victoria Women's Centre, kind of showcasing that event and revisiting it 1 year on from when it occurred. And yeah, like having lived through the experience of creating work for this exhibition for my grad show this year, like the work that goes into just setting up the space itself and the amount of dedication and coming together of so many people to create something this special. I think the fact that the students of the 2024 grad show created this protest and chose to make that sacrifice, it meant that people who had didn't they didn't have to be there to see the work that went in. It was an event that inherently showcased how much effort these students have put in over the course of their degree, and they made a public statement saying what we're talking about right now is more important than that. We are going to sacrifice that opportunity because this is more important to be bringing to the forefront of everyone's attention. I think that's just so special and powerful and so necessary currently. And it's been an honor to see everyone come back together this year to create this exhibition, sort of re-examining that moment too, sort of the work that all of the students have put in to bring their art back to us, to write incredible pieces for our catalogue that we've made, to dedicate time to all of the planning. It's just been fantastic.
Yeah, could you? That's one of the questions I was getting to. Could you talk a little bit more about the catalogue?
Absolutely. What we did is we put out an open call to as many people as we could get in touch with who were originally a part of the protest or sort of peripheral to it, like the lecturers, Sherelle Moody, the incredible journalist who is the founder of Australian Femicide Watch, whose research and constant work this is actually based off of. And essentially, it was just non-prescriptive. We said we want anything that you guys would be willing to share with us. It could be a reflection, it could be poetry, it could be a letter to people, to Isla Bell, who is the young woman whose death actually kind of was the catalyst, I think, of this movement. Feel free, Holly, if you have any other thoughts on that as well.
Absolutely.
And we just received just an incredible myriad of responses and this beautiful kind of nebulous of reflection and grief, and just to hear how everyone felt in the moment or how this touched everyone differently, as an event to participate in or from the lecturers at the university. I think it's come together as this incredible document of testimony to that and to how a change occurs and how something like this protest grows organically out of, what just a series of decisions that everyone decided to make and to be courageous about doing. So, yeah, it's really become something so special and something I'm so proud of to have been a part of.
Holly, we're going to jump in there.
If I were to expand a little bit on how sort of the reaction to Isla Bell's death sort of brought things on, that was something that was, I mean, emerging in the news, I would say, over the course of the setup and then around the same time as the opening night of the exhibition. And also something that was emerging in the news, and I think a very apathetic way, a sensationalist way. And I've thought about this a little bit, it why it felt so almost personal to our cohort is, she was around our age. We didn't know her, but it felt very much like she could have been part of our cohort. Our cohort is predominantly women or women identifying, and a lot of the artworks themselves as well, a lot of people's actual displays were focused on women's issues and even violence against women as well. And then you have at the same time this horrendous example of it, and this horrendously apathetic media portrayal as well, as if violence against women is some sort of piece of entertainment, And I think artists have so much potential and so much desire to bring emotionality to these things, to showcase the human capacity to care and the ability for art to create that in others. And that's something that goes hand in hand with protest. That's why protest appears in art so much. It's the need to express. It's the need to express that something is wrong, or that you care about something. And so art is in some ways the antithesis to the news representation that you see nowadays. So I think that's something that really drove the movement over the course of the grad show
I
in
like that
many
you
ways,
just the word power there as well. I've got so many questions here, but we need to
yeah.
the word one. I was going to get to it later, but the word power that you've just used there, and obviously rest in power, like that seemed highly like that the way you spoke about that, how you said that, it felt personal. What does How do I want to ask this? Rest in, this was a question for later, but I'm going to ask it now.
Yeah.
Rest in power, what does that mean to you? Both, yeah.
I think it champions the strength of the person or that which has passed away. It's to me, it indicates an ongoing fight. It indicates strength in spite of struggle as well. To me, it's almost a promise as well. If I were to say rest in power, to me it means that there are those that are fighting for an injustice that has occurred. That's what it stands for to me. And that's why I think it fits so well here.
Dara, did you want to say anything there?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can speak to is that, yeah, although I wasn't in their year level, it was something that kind of reached out and hit us all. It was a surreal time. I grew up in the same area as Isla Belle. We both grew up in the Dead Eater Ranges out east, and we went to the same primary school, even though she was a few years younger than me. And so we had intersecting social circles. And I remember the morning that it broke in the news, my friend, who was friends with one of her friends, reached out and told me. And the roller coaster of that kind of week and the weeks following of it was there's not words to describe kind of that awful feeling, the sort of the sinking, and then feeling like this is something that was so personal, even though we weren't close, but to watch it be picked up by the media, as Holly said, in such an apathetic and sensationalized way. And then to watch all of these incredible people come out and sort of almost like steal back her legacy to take what was, she was sort of robbed, I think, in the media of having of her own story, of her own narrative, as so many women who are murdered are. And this was an incredible promise. I love that word so much. It was a promise that people made to see this as not a closed opportunity, but an one that's ongoing to continue to define her legacy and redefine it as one of strength and community and care. And it was just, yeah, it was indescribable and so, so powerful.
Thank you both for sharing that. And you can feel the pain and yeah, you can feel the pain. But I love the focus on power of this. And that leads me to, I wanted to, okay, I've got a few questions here and I'm trying to like, because if I get to, so visitors can write on the walls.
Yeah, so the exhibit is still in the process of forming. Essentially, what we are hoping to do is provide sort of a continuation of the work that Holly and her cohort started to give visitors a chance not only to see the documentation of what happened and actually see some of the artworks that were turned around, returned around again, so that people do get the chance to actually view this that sacrifice, but also create a space where people get to sort of perform that action and continue that work. So we'll be providing a list of names that has been tirelessly updated by Sherelle Moody up until this point, of all of the women who have been lost to violence since January of 2024, and a space for people to actually perform that action of writing those names on the wall, of making them tangible and creating that sort of community act, communal action, of care and yeah, tangibility.
I feel like we haven't like fully covered what the protests sort of looked like and how this is a continuation of that. So the primary action that was taken during that grad show week was a combination of turning works around or taking works down from the grad show and instead writing tributes on the wall to Isla Bell and other women who had been lost to violence last year. For example, Alba, a fellow student of mine, Artichoke,
Natasha, yeah.
yes, Atasho, there you go, wrote actually on her wall in lieu of her works. The 85 women who up until that point had been listed by Cheryl Moody as having been lost to violence so far that year, and then having later in the exhibition to actually write an 86th name as well. And so that's an example of the action that was taken at that time. And being able to write on the walls in charcoal, as most of us did at the time, in this exhibition is a continuation of the same form of that action.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Zara, were you gonna say something
No,
there?
I'm just, yeah,
Yeah,
that's
I know, it's
Holly said it
that
all.
yeah, it's
Yeah.
basically this wasn't one of my questions. Why charcoal?
To some degree,
Wait,
it
I
was a
just had a visual.
continuation of what I think. I'm trying to remember if Ellie, she was the first one who wrote on the wall, used predominantly charcoal, or whether she used texta. There was a little bit of both, but I think the reality is that at the end of our exhibition, we're having to reset these spaces for the honors students to then come in. And charcoal is one of the easier things,
To
as
mark a
callous as it
wall.
is, one of the easier things to have to erase at the
Yeah.
end of that week, which is in itself was kind of an uncomfortable process to go through, to have to do that. And it felt in a way in connection to the way that things move so quickly nowadays and the media circuit moves so quickly. You know, we had a very small window of less than a week to engage in this protest and to have that platform. And at the end of the week, we're having to sort of move, well, physically move on from that. And it was, that could have been that. But then there were honors students and master's students who also engaged in the process in the protest as well. And then we've got this exhibition this year that's reflecting on and continuing the movement. And so that in itself is a little bit of a rejection of the fast-paced nature of media and of the news cycle nowadays, to say actually a year on, we haven't forgotten and we are continuing to celebrate and reshape Isla Bell's story and to reflect on this number that was in our heads at the time as well. And
Oh, Polly.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I did have another, but now I have to move back to Isla. I had Zara, unless you wanted to jump in there.
The one thought that I had is we've part of our documentation that we're displaying is Ellie's given us some screenshots of the messages that she shared in the group chat when she first, I think, let you guys know that that's what she was doing. And one that struck both me and Jess is someone just saying, I need to find a pen. And just the thought of this studio space having been so meticulously transformed into a pristine gallery, as there was not even a pen around
Oh
somewhere.
yeah, everything gets put away. It was so hard to find in some ways the tools. Like for example, I think when out, but it was there was a sense of community in that as well. Everybody's running around to each other and going like, "Do you have anything on hand?" And like I happen to be somebody who's always carrying charcoal around as well, and so a lot of the charcoal came from my pencil case, you know. But
I
yeah,
think you
it's
or Meg messaging and saying, like, I've left charcoal by the sink, like, it's there if you need it. Like, it was
yeah, it was
just
probably Meg,
beautiful.
but yeah.
Oh, that's so cute. I don't think I've heard anyone say that. Oh, I always have charcoal on hand.
Just artist things, you
Just
know?
artist things, yeah.
Right? Honestly. Okay, well, look, I'm just checking on time here. So I have two more questions. One is it might be a bigger question, maybe for another day to have you on, but I'll ask it anyway. What do you think that people misunderstand or overlook about gendered violence in Australia right now? I know.
Wow, that is a big question. Do you want to speak to that, Holly?
In some senses, I'm having to put myself in the mind of somebody who does overlook
Okay.
it. But I would say the prevalence of it to some degree. The narrative shifting of it as well. I think people can be swept up in or influenced by a media language in referring to gendered violence that can really pervade how people view these news stories when they come out as well. A certain influencing into blame that happens as well. And so people, I think, intrinsically don't acknowledge that it could be any of us. They think that they're doing the right things, or their friend would never do that as well. You know, and that's something that I think Cheryl Moody addresses really well, actually. You'll see on her Instagram often that she will post images of news headlines or language that is used to minimize it or to shift blame. This is something that happened a lot with Isla Bell. So that's something that I think is under-recognized.
It's like the oh, sorry, you go, Zara.
No, sorry.
No, I want you to.
I was just gonna say to like build off what Holly said, which is so true. I think because it is such a prolific issue and something that is can only feel big scale to confront, it's hard to remember that it is made up of a million bricks. It's a foundation of a million tiny bricks that upon which men feel supported to or feel empowered to murder women or be violent to women. And I think until we start confronting it as that, as the language that media uses, the fact that women's names aren't used in headlines about their deaths, the fact that mental health support services and intervention services for men are defunded or just not available, the fact that social services and health services for women or people in domestic violence relationships or family dynamics aren't given enough resources to be able to support the number of people who need it. It is just a million different ways in which this platform is strengthened. And I think growing from that, the only way to solve it is there's not one perfect key answer out there to fix all of this all at once. It is going to be a million different ways that we attack this problem and intervene in that cycle of violence. And I think that something like this protest as a disruption that brings the conversation back to the forefront and re-highlights the scale and humanizes the women and brings Isla back to the front of her own story, I think it starts that interruption at the cultural level and at the social level. And that's not the only answer, but it is one answer. And I think we just need to keep shifting that Overton window back towards one where men don't feel empowered to commit violence against women.
I'm going to try to close out the interview here and ask you. My gosh, by the way, thank you for both of your responses there. That was, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Looking forward, what meaningful change? Sorry, I'm still trying to get my. What meaningful change? What would meaningful change look like to you?
Did you want to go, Holly?
You can start if you want.
That's such a fantastic question. I think one of the things that I want to see more of, and a small example of, we've partnered with Moth Design, who are an incredible team who have been helping us make this exhibition and sort of fine-tune all of the millions of details of it. And in the catalogue, we had been putting together a draft, and we didn't know that they'd been putting together a draft, and they sent it to us, and we'd both included support sections of contact details for support services. And we had a whole myriad of the incredible support services that are available through QVWC anyway. And, all of the incredible organizations like 1-800 Respect and Casa House, and Moth Design came back with three, and two of them were targeted towards men and men's mental health. And what it did is we both sat back and went, we need to start shifting this to where the problem lies, and the issue lies with men. And so conversations that bring that to the forefront of the table and take the weight off of women, which is built off of the victim blaming, as Holly said, but the responsibility to protect ourselves, when the issue and the focus lies with men, it's the answer has always been there. So on a community level, to see men actually step up to the table and be the ones that call each other out and also recognize the issue and start shifting their own sort of internal biases and just demonstrating examples of that for other men to see. I think there are some incredible men out there, and like it's time to start seeing that. That's what I would say.
I totally agree with Sarah. It's something that's going to take time as well to work towards. I think there needs to be a degree of respect, even at a policy level, for not just immediate solutions, short-term solutions. Like, for example, I'm based in Tasmania at the moment, but I know Victoria's got this thing at the moment about like adult crime, adult time. But we need to look at how people are growing up to end up in these headspaces of behavior. And that's through a lack of support. That's through a lack of support for the education system. That's a lack of support for the arts. It's a lack of support for communities that are financially struggling. That's what's leading to this. And rather than addressing that for the future, we're getting so much rhetoric about sticking a band-aid over a wound that needs stitches and time. Like it's important to bring that education in and encourage that empathy and break down these behaviors of toxic masculinity that occur from a young age. And that starts with men leading by example.